Hey, Anna, this is a pretty exciting anniversary you got coming up. 175 years of the Cincinnati Observatory. Can you believe it?
No, I can't.
And, I mean, we've got this big event coming up. It's on November 8th.
That's right.
175th anniversary of John Quincy Adams coming to Cincinnati, laying the cornerstone, starting the observatory. What do you got planned for us?
It's going to be amazing.
A big party, right?
Big party. We're having a big event. It's going to be fabulous. There's going to be history. I can't. History and... Hold on. Ah! Say it again. I didn't know that you were going to ask like that. Okay.
Oh, I didn't think I was going
to. Hold on. Just let me do it again.
Okay.
Okay. Just like, say it again. Do that. And then I'm ready.
All right.
I thought you were going to do something else. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, we got this big anniversary coming up. 175 years of the observatory. What do you got planned for us?
It's going to be a bonanza.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be history. It's going to be a presentation. We're going to have hors d'oeuvres. There'll be drinks. We're going to have 230 people in the Monastery Event Center. Such a gorgeous place, also built on the site of the original observatory. And it's going to be amazing. Is it on your calendar?
It is on my calendar. I'm going to be there. That's
like,
for sure.
Like, nope.
I got a table.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm going to bring all my crazy friends. So just watch out.
I can't wait.
But it's going to be so cool to be on the same exact site that the observatory stood on, where John Quincy Adams was, where Ormsby Mitchell was.
So we're going to do some viewing that night of some scopes.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, the observatory sat there for 30 years up on Mount Adams. And now it's in its new location, brand new.
New.
Only been there since 1873,
right.
And now we're in Mount Lookout, and the only thing that moved from the old observatory to the new observatory, two things, the telescope and the cornerstone.
Oh, yeah.
So you can still visit the same telescope and the cornerstone they brought over from Mount Adams.
It's amazing.
Can't wait for the anniversary.
It's going to be so good. Woohoo!
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I have all kinds of questions. In this episode, our sixth president, John Quincy Adams, is our guest. So I can't believe we're going to talk to John Quincy Adams.
Right.
Are you so excited?
I am super excited. I cannot believe we got him. I mean,
he's so in demand.
So unlikely of a guest to have here on our Looking Up podcast. But
it's crazy.
I mean, it's great. Here's a president that was really fired up about science and space, especially. And I can't wait to talk to him.
Well, you know, I feel like, though, there's a lot of presidents that care about space and care about, you know, space exploration, to be fair. I mean, NASA was created 60 years ago or whatever
it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, what do you, if you were president, do you think that you would just be like, look, here's the agenda. It's space all the time.
Space, and more space. I mean, I would, but I'm kind of biased.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of an interesting political thing, you know, that these presidents kind of wrap themselves around NASA and space travel because it is such a popular subject. And I think people get really fascinated and inspired by it. So we can take, you know.
And it's unifying.
I think it is.
Everybody can relate to.
Exactly.
Looking up and wondering.
Astronomy is like a feel-good story. It's all about exploration.
Until asteroids come into play, and then everybody just freaks out.
That's true.
But, you know, you're right. Yeah,
we think about, President Kennedy is the one, you know, you think of a lot with the Apollo missions and going to the moon, and that we're going to send people to the moon by the end of the 1960s. And
pressure.
I mean, what a challenge that was. And it made it just, you know, barely at the, you know, July 1969. They cut it a little close. But anyway, they made it. And it was just a huge effort of people and money to get this happening and done. And I think that still resonates. There resonates. There are people that in the 70s, there are all these planetariums that were built and all these science centers were built because kids were like inspired by space. And
we were like, that's cute. We've been here since 1840 something.
No, right.
We didn't talk smack about any other.
The observatory.
It's been around a long time.
We didn't talk a lot of smack. John Quincy Adams doesn't talk a lot of smack either,
right.
So we better tighten it up before him.
Exactly.
But so the other presidents, I mean, the last three presidents have really kind of tried some space endeavors in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I can think back to like George W. Bush, that he kind of unveiled this plan that, okay, we're going to send people to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this big press conference and we're going to send people to Mars and make this happen. And I did kind of watch it with a little skepticism. I was like, well,
what a surprise.
You know, because going to Mars is not easy. It's not like if you're going to plan it, then you got to really do it. And I felt, well, was his statement, okay, we're going to go to Mars and we're going to make the plans. And then.
Was he like, how hard can it be?
Right. I think it was how hard it can be. It can't be
we
that hard.
We got this.
We got it. No problem. And I think he was trying to like, you know, do this kind of Kennedy-esque thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't quite work. And I think it was just basically because, well, NASA's budget wasn't expanded, so how are they going to go to Mars? And so, but it was it did get people's attention.
Yeah. When did Spirit and Opportunity?
Yeah. So Spirit and Opportunity, they went up. Let's see, 03 and 04 is when they were flown up.
So
there.
Something just yeah, not people
exactly. And they have you know you got to do the groundwork first. You got to do these other missions and the robotic ones and everything.
But although, have I told you about my friend that asked me if The Martian was based on a true story?
Yeah, I think you did.
I didn't bring it up again. Sorry, yeah. It's just the funniest thing ever.
Oh, well, Matt Damon is pretty convincing.
I know.
I wonder if
hot.
They would have been like. So did Matt Damon really go to Mars?
That's right. He can do everything.
He was playing a character in a real show where he went to Mars.
Sorry, just had to make sure I brought that up. Okay.
That's right.
So go ahead.
So that one didn't quite work as well as the Kennedy one because mm-hmm. there just wasn't a lot to back up with it. And then President Obama starts, and his plan with space travel was a little controversial, actually.
Uh-oh.
He wasn't okay, we're going to do this, and this. He, the space shuttles are getting old. We can't keep reusing them. Reusing spacecrafts turns out to be a great idea.
We can't put them on Craigslist.
Nope. So we need to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with manned missions?
Mm-hmm.
And
Or
womaned missions. And so they decided we're cutting them. We're going to cut the space shuttle, and we're not going to have a replacement.
But it was because of the age of the spacecraft, not necessarily a lack of focus on the importance of space travel.
Exactly.
It was more just we got to rework it.
But it was a controversial decision to say, okay, well, we're going to stop these 35-year-old space shuttles going mm-hmm. up in space again for the 50th time or whatever, and try to figure out what are we going to do next. And so he actually canceled a program that was going to come next. And people were like, whoa, man, you don't mess with space and stuff like that. And people asked me about that a lot. They said, are you kind of, you know, mad that Obama cut this stuff? And I said, well, at first I was like, yeah, I want people to go to space. But then the more I thought about it is those missions were costing a lot of money.
Well, and it was for safety, right?
That's true. It really was for safety.
You're people... like, that, whatever, safety, safety. It's pricey.
No. Well, so what this did was it opened up the budget for unmanned missions, missions. And so mm-hmm. that half decade was like the golden age of unmanned space travel. Mm. We had a spacecraft around Mercury, Venus, Mars. Jupiter was there, did a crash somewhere in there.
And
then Saturn, and then asteroids and comets and like the sun, everything was watched during that time. And it was all because, well, we kind of refocused.
So we learned other stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Don't you think, though, that I feel like when we think about technology now, right, I feel like it's crazy that we were able to go to the moon so long ago.
I mean...
I don't know. I just feel like all these advances, it's amazing to me. I don't know.
I mean, the technology that they used to go to the moon was, so primitive by today's standards. And so that I think that's kind of a testament. It's like, well, why haven't we gone back if mm-hmm. we can do it easier? It's like, well, it's never easy. Going through space at, you know, tens of thousands of miles an hour, things are going to happen.
Right.
And so that's the thing is, so are we going to go back now? So is the pendulum swinging the other way to like, okay, we did all the unmanned stuff.
Right.
Let's go to manned stuff. And so that enters into our current president who came up with Space Force. And so that was his attempt at the big idea. So every president kind of does this. Is like, let's talk about space. Usually somewhere around our second year in office, it's like a pattern. It is a pattern that all the presidents kind of get into this.
I didn't realize you'd been like monitoring the mentions of space and presidential agendas.
Yeah, because there's a lot of criticism. NASA has to like defend itself a lot because people say, well, why are we spending all this money to shoot rockets into space and everything like that? When we could solve problems on, well, it is cool. I mean,
I'm sorry.
That's usually my second answer.
Yeah,
my first answer is it's not not a waste of money. All the technologies that they use to make the rockets and to make everything goes into space, mm-hmm. that ends up benefiting us.
Like, yeah.
So the study that's going on since NASA started was for every $1 we put into NASA, we get $7 back in jobs, technology, things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, cell phones, we would not have cell phone technology without NASA. We wouldn't have all sorts
of stuff.
I like
that you say like you care about cell phone technology.
I do.
I can't help it that you have like a flip phone.
My flip phone would not work.
Every time I'm going to bring it up. Okay.
I mean, somebody had to invent that hinge. And so,
how much did that hinge cost?
That's true. NASA's hinge was a little pricier. But that's true. But eventually, now we can use that. So it works great.
At least I have a smartphone that, like, you know, has apps and stuff on it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So
thank you, NASA, for my smartphone.
Exactly.
I love watching puppy videos, you know, wherever I want.
Think about how your life would be different without that.
I don't want to think about it.
Exactly. Is that even living?
It's not living.
On November 9th, 1843, former President John Quincy Adams was in Cincinnati to preside over the dedication of the Cincinnati Observatory. As it turned out, that was his last public speech. Adams was a supporter of space and observation, so we wanted to learn more about him, and we've got John Quincy Adams on the phone with us. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
So, I mean, this is amazing. You've been a lot of things: congressman, president, statesman. And one thing that maybe people don't know so much about is your passion for science and especially astronomy. Where did that come from?
Well, I suppose looking up and seeing the stars, watching the moon. In Russia, when I was in Russia as a young man, and then even when I was back there later as our first minister to Russia, the winters are very long and the nights are. And I had seen astronomical observatories elsewhere in Europe, but in America, we didn't have a single one. And when I became president in my inaugural address, I urged the building of observatories, and I referred to them as lighthouses of the sky. And my enemies, of which I have numerous enemies, said that, John Quincy Adams, he's crazier than his father was. He wants to put lighthouses up in the sky.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
So, I suppose it was just from observation and reading about astronomy. It just led me further in my interest.
Well, Cincinnati, you know, has the first public observatory in the country, and you were here to dedicate it. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about?
All right. It was, I believe, my last major travel anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my 70s at that time. It was really a horrendous chore getting out there. I traveled by canal boat, coach, horseback, and this was in November.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's right.
I remember especially on the canal boats, they would have a stove in there for heat, of course, and it also provided a great deal of smoke, most unpleasant.
Yeah, we were the Queen City of the West. This was like the far west, you could go the frontier almost.
That's true, yes.
And so when you came to Cincinnati and you dedicated the first observatory, what was that like, laying that cornerstone?
I recall how dreadful the weather was.
Always, right? In November. It's still like that.
Yes, and there was a great deal of mud, ooh, as I recall. That, I think, is my main recollection of it. The people were very, very enthusiastic, and it was a pleasure to meet them and talk to them.
Well, you know, for all your trouble, Mr. President, we did name a city after you. We named Mount Adams for you.
Well, I think that's quite an honor.
So you enjoyed your visit though to Cincinnati and meeting everyone, even though the trip was a little unpleasant at times.
And the weather troublesome.
And the weather and the you enjoyed yourself here?
I certainly did. Yes. I had been on a journey into the West previously, and we set out to see Niagara Falls, and then I went on into the West, and it was when I returned to my home in Quincy that I got the invitation to come to Cincinnati.
Oh, that's so good. And I know you mentioned your detractors and your enemies that wouldn't let the funding of a national observatory go through Congress, but
we call them haters.
Oh, right, the haters—that's what we call them now. you had a pretty good hand in the foundation of the Smithsonian. Is that correct?
That is true. This Englishman James Smithson left in his will. He left a very substantial amount of money to this country to be used for an educational purpose. And, of course, when political figures see that there's money around, they want to direct it to things that perhaps were not the testator's intention. And I preserved that money so that it went to establish the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, that's an incredible legacy. I mean, there's so many things you did in your life, and there's so many incredible accomplishments. What would you like to be known for of all these, you know, incredible things you accomplished in your life?
Well, I was very pleased with the two books, two volumes that were published of my lectures at Harvard on oratory and rhetoric. I suppose my defense of the Amistad Africans in the Supreme Court, which brought about their freedom, and they were sent back to Africa, which is where they wanted to be. I had not been before the Supreme Court for a good number of years, and I was very doubtful that I could be of any use to serve a good purpose. But I did it, and they were given their freedom.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, President Adams. This has been a great pleasure.
Okay. I have a small part of my address of dedication, if you would like it.
Sure. That'd be great. Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
All right. Well, here it is. So peculiarly adapted to the nature of man is the study of the heavens, that of all animated nature, his bodily frame is constructed as if the observation of the stars was the special purpose of his creation. This peculiar adaptation of the mechanism of the human body did not escape the notice of the Roman poet Ovid, who, in his account of the creation, says that while other animals were formed to look downward to the earth, he gave to man a heavenward-looking face to gaze at the sky and commanded him to raise his head and turn his eyes towards the stars.
Whoa.
I have chills. I love it.
Oh, man, forever the old man eloquent right there, right? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Pleasure talking to you.
All right. Well, I think we got it here,
that so
and
great.
That was perfect. That was. Thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. Delighted.
We know you're not really President Adams.
Well,
that's true. That's true. Well,
thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, and we'll. I think I must have met you, Jim, back a couple years ago when I was up in Quincy at the National Historic Site.
That sounds very likely.
They had an astronomy day up there, and I thought, boy, you look the part. You got it. This is perfect. So hopefully I'll be able to come back and visit again. And I was there on a cloudy night, so they weren't able to see the stars, but maybe next time.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You are so welcome. Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We've been talking with John Quincy Adams, expert and impersonator Jim Cook. Jim, thanks so much for doing this. He not only knows everything about the former president, he is an in-demand Adams impersonator. So Jim and President Adams, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right, so we're changing things up a bit with Crank File today. You know, usually we respond to, you know, we have Crank File questions that come in or we maybe talk about that. But today we're going to talk about a crank story, right? And I think it's interesting because we usually respond to Crank Files in a pretty calm way, maybe an email, maybe a phone call. But you've got a story that was sort of handled a different way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the usual reaction. If you get a question about space and then you have to answer it, and, you know, you have to be nice and polite and say, you know,
this unless they push you, then it's like...
Well, yeah, then if they push you, then something happens.
Right.
But so we're going to go way back to the 1500s.
Whoa.
To a crank file that happened to an astronomer back then by the name of Tycho Brahe. So he was this Danish,
awesome
Danish nobleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he, was... not exactly sure the situation, but he was in an argument with a colleague who had a different opinion on a math problem.
Uh-oh.
And they had such a heated argument about this math problem that they decided to take it outside. And so Tycho Brahe,
oh my gosh,
you know, honor was offended by this math upstart, takes him outside and says, okay, dueling time. That's how you handle the crank file back then. You go to a duel. So they draw their swords. Now, this is at night.
Swords?
Yes.
At night?
At night.
With no light around because it's
sword play 1600s. At night is never a good idea.
Write that down, kids.
And so as they start their duel and the swords are, you know, whatever they're doing. What are you doing?
What?
Are they flying?
Swords flying?
What do you call that?
Swords.
Clanging.
Swords are swording.
They're swording around. One errant... hits Tycho Brahe on the nose and lops off the end of his nose.
Ow, ow, ow.
Exactly.
What?
Now, this would destroy you, I would think, after, you know, you would just be like, oh my gosh, my nose is gone, basically.
Yeah.
Now,
over a math problem.
Yes.
So this I don't even care about math. Just kidding. Again, kids, just kidding. I love math.
You love math.
Math is great.
But not, you should never care about math that much.
I don't want to lose an appendage over it.
I know.
No.
So he paid the sacrifice for it. And
sacrifice.
So in the end, I don't know if he liked it, but he kind of made it part of his look. He had a series of prosthetic noses that he would wear out in public.
Like to match his outfit?
Yeah. They would match his outfit. He had several of them, mostly made of metal.
Ow.
And that he would adhere them with a putty-like substance.
So they weren't like strapped?
No, they weren't. They were not strapped. That would be funny with little whiskers on it, too.
That's what I'm thinking, like a Halloween man.
No, he affixed them with putty to his face. So you're looking at him and you're like, that nose is not realistic.
But, which you could say about people today.
That's
so
true.
Get some things done
true.
And it doesn't look. What if he had like allergies and like, I don't know, it was like.
I've never thought about that. That's a good, if you had to sneeze, what happens?
Yeah, it just goes flying off.
The nose comes off. Then he gets in his pocket, gets out the spare nose, and puts it on his face.
Never leave home without it.
Now, if you know, that is just one of unbelievable number of anecdotes involving Tycho Brahe.
Really?
Oh, this guy had such a wild life. I mean, so again, he was a Danish nobleman. He his family owned 1/7 of Denmark, essentially.
Okay.
And so he, you know, he had some money to kill and some time to kill, and he becomes like the leading bad boy astronomer with his own observatory and his own staff and all of his own equipment on his own island.
His fake noses on his own island.
So he builds this elaborate castle on his own island that he runs like a petty dictator.
Uh-huh.
And he observes the sky every night for 20 years and gets the best data. He's the best naked eye astronomer there ever is. Naked nosed, Dawson. I thought I wanted to get in there before you did.
I appreciate that.
So part of his exploits during... nights when it's cloudy and he has nothing else to do, he threw great parties at the castle.
I don't hate this.
He had a pet elk.
Okay.
That one at one of the parties broke into the beer, got drunk, fell down the steps, and died at a party.
Oh.
He had a
I mean, the drinking, but yeah, it died. That's sad.
He had a clairvoyant jester named Jep that would sit under the table at the times, then come out and read the future.
Are you just making these things up?
No.
This is for real.
This is for real. And he died in a very strange way.
Oh, God. The jester or Tico?
The legend, Tico.
Okay.
The legend is that he was at another party, drinking quite a bit, and he, as the etiquette said, he could not get up out of his chair until the host got out. And the host did not get up out of his chair purposefully, and Tycho Brahe had to sit there and hold himself until his bladder burst. And he died of a burst bladder from holding in his pee. Now, that was the legend.
Are we?
And so they dug him up a few years ago. They examined him, and he died of a burst bladder. It was true.
What is happening? What is this? Is this for real?
This is a real guy.
Okay.
There should be a comic book character called Tycho Brahe.
There should be, but I should just say I did not know anything about this story, and this is a lot to
it's
take
a lot.
In. Okay.
And it all started with a duel in the dark with swords and a math problem. And then the Tycho Brahe legend goes from there.
Have you ever been mad enough about something, a crank, that you're like, get your dueling sword. We're going out and going to settle this.
I know. I need to put a sword over over my desk at the observatory. We're dueling, buddy.
Well, that's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to Jim Cook, our John Quincy Adams professional historical reenactor, for joining us.
We appreciate you listening and would love to hear from you. You can drop us a note with topics or guest ideas or questions about space on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Parents, we hope you'll share Looking Up with your kids and send us any questions they may have. Or if you have questions, we want to hear those too.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts, and give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes on wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.